Tonight's shir is Ulanishmas Betzalel Ben Yitzchak. So tonight we have the pleasure of learning Parshas Bahar. It's a tough night to come to a Chumash because there's other events taking place in the Jewish world tonight. Tonight is the Lag BaOmer Hilula, the celebrations that are done in many communities, celebrating, commemorating the life and the passing of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. We've spoken in other venues. Maybe if there's time tonight, we'll just touch a little bit about perhaps what one of the lessons of Lag BaOmer. But tonight is a very festive night in Klal Yisrael. How that works with halacha is still questionable. Listen to some of the other shurim, our halacha shurim on Lag BaOmer. We touched upon it because we're still in mourning until tomorrow. But nonetheless, the common custom in Klal Yisrael is to celebrate tonight. But I can't imagine a better way of showing respect to Moshe Rabbeinu than learning Torah. I think that's what he would want all of us to be doing. So Baruch Hashem, we have the chance to study Parshas Bahar together. Again, we also have another specialty that Parshas Bahar is separate. Very often Parshas Bahar is with Parshas Bechukaisai, and many people opt to learn Parshas Bechukaisai because it's exciting, it has the Teichecha in it, it has scary statements from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Parshas Bahar is always, or often overlooked, so we have a chance to study Parshas Bahar and see that although Parshas Bahar does discuss Shemitah, and that's not relevant for sure here in Chutz Laretz, but nonetheless, I think there's a lot of very important messages of Parshas Bahar that is relevant to us today, even in America. So what is the overall view of Parshas Bahar? So there is the common theme of Shemitah and Yovel. That's the basic idea of Parshas Bahar. Then also in this week's Parsha, there's an idea called Einos Dvarim and Einos Mammon. Overcharging on business deals, and what's called a nos dvarim is certain ways of speaking, hurtful speech. Then at the end of the parasha, the Torah discusses again, don't learn, if a Jew is sold as an eved to a guy, he shouldn't learn bad behaviors from his neighbor, he shouldn't build up a desire, and he should guard the Shabbos. There's also a theme that I always felt is true in this week's parasha of the downtrodden. The Torah in this week's parasha discusses a lot how we as Jews relate to other Jews that are not in the best place that they're in. Either it's financially or they're going through a difficult time, and how the Torah wants us as Jews to look at other Jews that are not necessarily in the best place. Often financially, or he's an Evet, or clearly he's not exactly where he wants to be, or he needs money. So the Torah has very specific rules and regulations of how we deal with the downtrodden, those that are not doing as well as others, how we should treat them and react to them. So the beginning of the parasha opens up. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe b'har Sinai leim. Hashem said to Moshe at Har Sinai. Okay. Hashem said a lot of things to Moshe ben Har Sinai. What is so significant about this pasuk? So the Baal HaTurim points out that what happened at the end of last week's parasha? At the end of last week's parasha, we had a very difficult parasha of the Mekalo. We had a fellow in Klai who decided to go out and curse HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Baal HaTurim, you know why the Torah put that story right next to the opening pasuk in this week's parasha? Says the Baal HaTurim to teach me that Smach Mekalo LeBahar Sinai, Fisha B'Sinai Shamu, Loisisa, we all heard at Har Sinai the words of Hashem that we're not allowed to curse him. And the world, the whole world shook at the Aseret HaDibros. V'zeh shama v'loy nizor. And this guy, he was there, he saw the action, it did nothing to him. He was completely not motivated or inspired by Har Sinai. That's why it opens up. V'idaber Hashem Moshe b'Har Sinai. Don't we forget, we had a thing called Har Sinai. And this Mekal was at Har Sinai. Yet this Mekal was not moved one iota to be impressed or to be moved by the fact that Hashem said not to do so. Now, when you read this Baal HaTurim, you think to yourself, wow, that Mekalo, he's a bad guy. But the truth is, really, we're guilty of this all the time in our life. We often see Yad Hashem, and we see Hashem up close in person, and it just doesn't move us to be better people. This Mekalo lived through Yetzias Mitzrayim. He saw Eser Makos, he saw Kriyas Yamsov, he saw Eser Dibros, and when he was mad at Hashem, he had no problem cursing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could that be? So the Mefarshim point out that that's the strong the Yetzer Hara is. A person can see Yad Hashem, he can see it all, front, up close in person. He sees it all. But when he's mad and he's angry, he can do things that are not correct. So therefore, says the Baal HaTurim, the Torah is juxtaposing the Mekalel to the opening part of this week's parasha is to remind us that we can see Yad Hashem, we can be there, we can experience it, and a moment later, we can fall right back. You know, very often in shul, in my shul, I'll give a fiery sermon about talking in davening. I speak before Musaf, and I'll give a fiery sermon about how bad it is to talk during davening. And then like during Chazaras HaShach, there'll be people that are talking. And someone came over to me and he asked me, he said, how do you deal with that? Doesn't that bother you that you just gave a fiery sermon about not speaking? And not more than 3 minutes later, there's some guy talking during Chazaras HaShach. The answer is that's what the Baal HaTurim is saying here also. That was the Mekalo. The Mekalo saw, he heard from Hashem, he heard from Moshe Rabbeinu, don't curse Hashem. And whatever, a few months, a few days later, he had no problem doing it. That we're often like that. We'll be inspired, and our inspiration will last as long as we're in the room. We'll go hear a speaker, we'll learn a sefer, we'll learn a sugya, and we'll be inspired for like 5 minutes. And then after that, it's business as usual. We're back to our regular selves. Therefore, says the Baal HaTorim, it's a tain on us. I'm not saying it's mutter what we do. It's wrong what we do. But the Baal HaTorim is telling us that's the Musar Haskell over here. We have to realize that when we're motivated and we're inspired, that inspiration should last beyond the small time that we are inspired. It should have an impact on us, hopefully, going forward in life. And then the Pasuk tells us, the next Pasuk, Daber el b'nei Yisrael. Hashem says to Moshe, speak to the Jewish people. V'amarta aleihem. And you should say to them. So if you notice, these are two different descriptions of speech. Daber is one, speak. V'amarta. Speak and speak. What is the difference between the daber and the v'amarto? We'll see in a second, but let's just get to the end of the pasuk. Ki savayu el ha'aretz, when you will come into the land. Asher ani nosei lechem, that I am giving to you, v'shav saha ha'aretz shabbas l'Hashem. And the land must rest, a resting for the sake of Hashem. That's the pasuk. This is the source of, we know today, of Shemitah. The first ha'ara on the pasuk is, what's the lashon of daber and v'amarto? What are the two different types of terminology? So the Sukkos David, Reb David Kviat, in his commentary to Chumash, points out the following observation. Daber is always lashon kasha, tough. When Hashem says, Vaydaber Shalom Moshe, that's tough, tough speech. V'amarto is lighter. It's easier going. So says the Sukkos David, why the double? Why is it soft and hard? So he explains that the mitzvah of Shemitah, although it needs to be tough, there's a sweetness to it as well. What's the tough part? Is actually keeping the Shemitah. Walking away from your field or from your business for an entire year and just saying, okay, it's free for all, that is not a simple thing to do. That is very difficult to do, as we'll discuss this evening. That's where you need the daber. But where's the avamarta? Where's the sweetness? Because the Maisa Hashem promised you that it's all going to work out for you. So in the midst of Shemitah, we have really two emotions boiling over. We have the daber, the kasha. It's tough. You got to speak tough to the Jewish people. Emphasizes it's a tough mitzvah, but v'amarta. It's a soft mitzvah, because at the end of the day, there's a soft side, says Reb David Kviat, to the mitzvah of Shemitah. Reb David Feinstein, in his Sefer on Chumash, makes a similar observation in last week's parasha. In last week's parasha, when the Torah discusses the rules and regulations and the restrictions that the Kehanim have with regard to coming in contact with the dead body, it says over and over, v'amarta. Emor v'amarta. So points out Reb David Feinstein, emor is always a sweeter talk. So asks Reb David Feinstein if any time the Torah should have to be tough, it should be something like Tumas Meis. Do you know how hard it is for a Kohen not to run over and just help a dead body? He wants to be in the Chavik Nisha. His heart is pouring out. He wants to help. Rabbi Salvation made this observation that the Kehanim are made by nature to want to help people. And now you tell the Kohen, I'm sorry, you can't come to the burial. What do you mean? I want to. It's my life. I want to be a good person. So it's hard. So why doesn't the Torah write Vayidaber? Says Reb David Feinstein, because as much as the Kohen wants to, he understands that his not doing it is for his benefit. He understands that since he is a higher level, since he needs to work in the Beis Hamikdash and has to be available to Hashem, his not coming Tameh is perhaps a gift. So therefore, it's the same idea also. We have to balance when we look at mitzvahs and we're exposed to mitzvahs. On one end, they're difficult, but on the other end, they're beautiful and special because they make us who we are. So writes Reb David Kviat. So, on this famous pasuk, there's the famous Rashi. Rashi asks, quoting a Teres Kayanim, Ma inyin Shemitah al Eitzer Har Sinai. What does the mitzvah of Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? So I heard from two very respectable Rabbanim who both said over the same joke, so I think I could say it over also, that there was a fellow in Eretz Yisrael that was watching a sitcom in Eretz Yisrael, and the sitcom was translated from English into Hebrew. And the sitcom, it basically, the comment was, what does one thing have to do with the other? What does this have to do with the price of tea in China? And the way they translated it was, Ma inyan Shemitah al Eitzel Har Sinai. That's how they translated it in Eretz Yisrael. So now you know that this became Pashat. This is the way people talk today. When someone wants to say, what does A have to do with B? They'll say, Ma inyan Shemitah al Eitzel Har Sinai. And you look at them like, what are you talking about? They're referencing this Rashi in this week's parasha, which again, it's not Rashi. Rashi is quoting a Medrash in Taras Kayanim. But Rashi asks the Kasha, Ma inyan Shemitah l'etzel Harsinai? What on earth does the mitzvah of Shemitah have to do with Harsinai? What does it say in the Pasuk? Hashem said to Moshe at Harsinai, he gave us the rules of Shemitah. He gave us everything at Harsinai. Why are we singling out that the mitzvah of Shemitah was given at Harsinai? All of the commandments were given at Harsinai. So Rashi gives his very, very famous answer. Just like Shemitah was given its general rules, its detailed rules, and its diktu keha, that all happened at Sinai. Av kula nemru chloisem v'dikdukem b'Sinai. This is supposed to be a memetzino. I'm supposed to learn out from here, just like the mitzvah Shemitah was given with all its details and all its regulations at Sinai, so to all the mitzvahs were also given at Har Sinai with all its details and all the trimmings. So what's the follow-up question on this Rashi? So again, so why pick Shemitah? If the purpose of this whole pasuk is just to tell me that everything at Sinai was given with all the details and all the halachic ramifications, so again, why pick Shemitah? What is significant about the mitzvah Shemitah? And the question is even stronger. The mitzvah Shemitah only comes up once every 7 years and only comes up in Eretz Yisrael. If you want to pick a mitzvah that calls and talks to us, pick a mitzvah like Shabbos. Shabbos is mitzvah wherever you live, whenever you live. And happens every single week. Pick a mitzvah that comes up all the time. Why are you picking such an obscure mitzvah of Shemitah, which only happens in Eretz Yisrael and only happens every 7 years? That's the question that everyone asks on Rashi. The other ha'ara that Reb Steinman points out, and I heard this from Rabbi Leibowitz B'Shem Reb Nissen Alpert in his Sefer, I understand what Klul Aseha is. That's general rules. Prateha, detail rules. What's the Diktukeha? What's that exactly? I understand. There's general rules of every mitzvah, then there's the detail rules. But what's the Diktukeha? What's that about? So Reb Steinman leaves off with a kash. He doesn't explain it. Could be the diktukeh is how you deal with the mitzvah. Meaning there's the rules of the mitzvah, there's the details of the mitzvah, then there's how do you live the mitzvah? How do you do the mitzvah? It's not enough just to know the rules, you got to do the mitzvah. You can learn all the Shulchan Aruch and all the Nesekeim and all the Shas and Tshuva Sfarim, and then the question is, how do you deal with this mitzvah? You can be an expert in the mitzvah of Kriyashma, you know all the shitas, but you say Kriyashma half-baked. So maybe the diktukeh is the how-to. I don't know. I'm not sure. But it's ha'ara that many people ask, what's the diktukeh? But the question that still is very troubling is, again, what was so special about Shemitah that we connected to Har Sinai? So the Chassam Sofer says an interesting idea. The Chassam Sofer says a couple of pieces from the Chassam Sofer. First of all, he says, we know for sure that Shemitah had to have been at Har Sinai. How do we know? Because what does it say in the parasha of Shemitah? Hashem guarantees you that if you keep the Shemitah, you'll have enough to eat. Who can make such a promise? Which human being can make such a promise? No one can make that promise. The only person who can make that promise is HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. Therefore, says the Chassam Sofer, I know at least that Shemitah is perhaps the most clearly of all the mitzvahs was given at Sinai because of the promise that was given. Reb Yosef Nechem Yekornitzer, who was actually an enikel from the Chassam Sofer, we quote him often, he was the last chief rabbi of Krakow, Poland. He died in 1933. So he has a very nice sefer on Chumash, and he says in his sefer like this. He says that the question is different. It's not my Indian Shemitah Eitel Har Sinai. It's not just why did we pick this mitzvah. He says Shemitah didn't need to be connected to Har Sinai at all. And he explains the following idea. He says, Shemitah represents time management. What's Shemitah? For you take every 7 years, you have a year off. Why? Because throughout that year, you're supposed to realize that there's a whole other world out there besides your agricultural development. When a farmer works the field, he's so focused on the farm. He works the farm from morning till night, and goes to sleep and does it all again the next day. So the seventh year break gives the farmer a time to say to himself, you know, there's more than the life than just the field. I got to start learning Torah. I got to start gaining knowledge. I got to be a better Eved Hashem. It's a time management. Because as much as we'd love to think we live forever, we don't live forever. So it's basically a time management idea. Says Rabbi Yosef Nechem Yekornitzer, when Klal Yisrael got the Torah at Har Sinai, till the Chet Egel, we in theory should have lived forever. We should have never had a concept of death. So he says, if that's true, so Shemitah and Har Sinai are totally opposite messages. Har Sinai represents living forever. Shemitah represents death. So why put the two together? That's Rashi's kash. Ma'in and Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai means that the two lessons are opposite messages. Shemitah is a message of realizing you're going to die one day, while Har Sinai in theory represents living forever. That's his pshat. The Chassam Sofer has another pshat where he goes a different route. He says Shemitah represents Yiras Hashamayim. You can't keep Shemitah unless you believe in God. There's no way any logical farmer can take a year off from his field unless he believes in Hashem. It's impossible. Says the Chassam Sofer, what was Har Sinai all about? Har Sinai taught us to fear God, to be humble. Why? What's the story? Every little kid knows this. I only remember this Chassam Sofer because I heard my daughter singing the song today about Har Sinai. We all know when Hashem was trying to figure out who we're going to give the Torah, so each mountain said, put the Torah on me. And Har Sinai said, no, I don't deserve the Torah. I'm not worthy. The mountain was humble. Says the Chassam Sofer, humility is what Har Sinai represents. Shemitah also represents humility. So the reason why the Torah was given at Har Sinai was for us to learn humility. Says the Chassam Sofer, Shemitah It automatically teaches humility. You realize you don't exist on your own. So, Frekt Rashi, Ma in Shemitah Latzisa, why is Shemitah next to a mitzvah? Why is Shemitah next to Sinai? Shemitah doesn't need the lesson of Sinai. It's self-understood to be humble. Rav David Kviat says another pshat in this Rashi. Beautiful, beautiful idea. He says, Ma in Shemitah Latzisa, what was special about Shemitah? So he says, Shemitah looks like perhaps the most difficult mitzvah in the world to keep. Shemitah is so, the task is so daunting. Walk away from my field for an entire year, it's impossible. Yet we know Hashem promises it's going to be good. So too, just like Shemitah is a representation of a very difficult mitzvah on the onset, but with a sweet ending to it afterwards. Because you have the promise from Hashem, it's all going to work out. So too, all mitzvahs are like that, says Reb David Kviat. Look at all mitzvahs as they seem to be so daunting, so impossible. How does Hashem expect me to put on tefillin every day? How does Hashem expect me to keep Shabbos? How does Hashem expect me to do all these things? It's so daunting. The answer is, just like Shemitah, it looks very scary, but the reward is so big. So to the mitzvahs, the reward is as big as the mitzvah. And don't be afraid to try it. That's the connection between Shemitah and all other mitzvahs. Reb Shimshon Pinkus says it's slightly different. Says Reb Shimshon Pinkus, can you imagine the farmer's life, the Shemitah year? It was drastically different than every other year of his life. The Shemitah changes your schedule. It changes your life. So too, all mitzvahs are supposed to change your life. When you're a God-fearing Jew, when you keep Shemitah Torah mitzvahs, your day is a different day. When you don't have Hashem in your day, so then there's no Shachris, Mincha, Ma'ariv, benching, Shkia, Tzeisek, Echavim, sunset, lighting candles. It's a free-for-all. You do what you want, when you want, you're not bound by anything. But when you fear Hashem and you're a God-fearing Jew and you're a religious Jew, so you got to know, I got to get up in the morning, I got to find out, is it time to put on my tefillin yet? Can I daven shacharis? Oh, I ate breakfast, I got a bench. Oh, your whole day is a different structure to it. So too, the Shemitah keeper, his whole year was changed. So that's the connection. Just like when you keep the Shemitah, it changes your whole life. It's not just, okay, I'll opt into Shemitah. It changes your whole daily schedule. So too, when you keep Torah and mitzvahs, it changes your whole schedule. And that's part of what it means to be a God-fearing Jew. It means it's going to change. It's going to impact how your day looks, how your Sunday looks, how your day is off. Look, everything is going to be impacted by Torah and mitzvahs. What does the Pasuk tell us? Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the Jewish people, Ki Savoyu, when they will come in. So the Al Shulch HaKadosh points out the Lashon Savayu means to come, as opposed to Naso, to travel. Because Savo means I have arrived. What does arrived mean? I reached my final destination. Because the final destination of the Jewish people is Ki Savayu Ala Eretz. I came to the land. It's not just that I popped in and I'm here to visit, I'm vacationing in Eretz Yisrael. That would have been the Lashon of traveling. Ki Savo means I arrived. This is it. This is where I belong. Ki savayu al aretz. I belong to be in Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael is where we belong and where we should be. The Netziv points out that the same way Klal Yisrael as a nation survives, shaloi keder chateva. The fact that we're still here today as a nation makes absolutely no sense. From a logical point, we should have been wiped off the map a long, long time ago. Forgetting the Romans, Babylonians, the Crusades, First Crusade, Second Crusade, Third Crusades that we had throughout all the pogroms and Chmelnytsky and the Holocaust and all the things that we have in our history, you know, basically Tisha B'Av in a nutshell, the fact that we're still alive itself is a miracle. And the answer is, we don't function al pi derech hateva. We're a nation that survives shalai keneged hateva, against the teva. Therefore, says the Netziv, the same way we as a nation live keneged hateva, the land of Eretz Yisrael lives keneged hateva. Because if you think about it, the whole Shemitah is illogical. From a agricultural, and we'll see maybe this is even a machlokes, from an agricultural point of view, not to work for an entire year makes absolutely no sense. The answer is that we're not a nation that makes sense. We're not a people that makes sense, and we're not a land that makes sense. Shemitah is not just a physical experience, it's a spiritual experience. The land of Eretz Yisrael is part of us. That's why we have Kedusha Sa'aretz. We're a holy nation, we're a holy people, and the land is a holy land. That's why we fight for Eretz Yisrael, not because it gives us the freedom to be Jewish. We fight for Eretz Yisrael because of Kedusha Sa'aretz Yisrael. That's why we don't want to go to Uganda and have a country there. We want to have a land here in Eretz Yisrael. That's our land. That's Kedusha Sa'aretz. So says the Netziv, the same way that Klal Yisrael lives Keneged HaTeva, which we clearly do, so to the Eretz Yisrael, the land of what we call today Eretz Yisrael, Israel, it lives Keneged HaTeva as well, and therefore it can survive a Shemitah year, even though Al Pi Derech HaTeva, it doesn't make sense. So the question is, why do we have the Mitzvah Shemitah? So the Kli Yakar goes through three possibilities to why did Hashem institute Shemitah. His first pshat is that it's for the agricultural benefit. Do you know why we have a Shemitah? Because the land needs a break. You will overwork the land. You will ruin the land. The land will not produce. You need to give the land a break. The same way we as human beings need a break, and we need to have days off, and studies have shown the more days off we have, the better we are as workers. That's why companies today are very into this. They're into happy environment and more days off and more restful workers, because the more restful you are, the better you produce. Same thing with the land, says the Kli Yakar. He quotes this from the Rambam, that if the land gets a break, the land will produce better. That's the first pshat. The problem with this pshat that the Kli Yakar points out is a couple of issues. First of all, it says in the Pasuk that why do we rest the land? Shabbos LaHashem. It's a rest for Hashem. According to this pshat, it has nothing to do with Hashem. It has to do with the land. You want to have productive land. Secondly, the Kli Yakar says, we know, Chazal tell us, that one of the reasons why Klal Yisrael got kicked out of Klal Yisrael, Churban Bayis Rishon, was because we didn't keep the Shemitah. Says the Kli Yakar, if I decide to ruin my field, that's the reason why Hashem should kick me out of Eretz Yisrael. I understand. It was a bad business investment not to give the Shemitah. But that's why I get kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. What did I do to Eretz Yisrael? If I want to ruin my field, that's my business. I'm foolish. But that's not a reason to deserve to be kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. So the Kli Yakar rejects that pshat. The Kli Yakar quotes a second pshat from the Akedah, who says that the tachlis of the mitzvah is the zecher chidush ha'olam. He's supposed to remember the creation of the world, the lisko yimois olam, and remember the end of the world, the soif yomai chaldei. Somehow through the Shemitah year, it's supposed to remind you of the cycles of life, creation, survival, and ultimately death. Says the Kli Yakar, I don't get that. Shabbos does that also. So he rejects that pshat. And he ends up coming out with the third and the final pshat. What's the third and the final pshat? That the purpose of the Shemitah is to ensure that farmers don't let their success get to their head. In Yiddishkeit, we have a theme based on a pasuk of Chumash of Koichi v'oitzim yadi osali esachayozeh. That means my strength and my success in the army is what allowed me to win this war. When we are good at something and we do well at something, tendency of human beings is to say, it's all about me. You know why I'm making big bucks? Because I'm really smart, and I'm a really hard worker, and I make really good connections, and I really know what I'm doing. So, and why did I win that war? Because I'm really smart, and I'm really trained at shooting, and I know how to outsmart the enemy. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's not the way it works. The reason why you're doing what you're doing is because I want you to do what you're doing, because I'm the master plan behind your success. If we allow a person to think he's controlling the field, he's going to lose out in a very essential level of emunah b'Hashem. You're going to think it's you. You're so smart and you're such a genius. You have these great ideas of how to grow crops. And you take Hashem out of the equation. Therefore, says the Kli Yakar, the purpose of the Shemitah year is to remind you, you're not the balabas. You're not the one in control. It's not you. It's Hashem. And I'll prove it to you. Because you're not going to work the field, and the field is still going to produce. And it's going to produce better than you ever made it produce. Because you're not the one producing it. It's me, Hashem. So when Hashem takes us out of the equation, He reminds us that He is controlling the equation. Therefore, says the Kli Yakar, now we understand why Klal Yisrael got such a severe punishment for not guarding the Shemitah. When you don't guard the Shemitah, the statement you're making to Hashem is, I'm in control. I'm the smart one, and I'm the one who's making it happen. Hashem says, oh, really? You're the one in control? Oh, that's not the way the world works. The world works based on HaKadosh Baruch. So therefore, the lesson of Shemitah, and this is a lesson that we all deal with on a constant basis. It's so easy to fall into the trap of thinking that it's us. Again, when a person is successful, if you're not successful, then there's not much of an assignment. But when a person is successful at the task at hand that he's doing, his job, his livelihood, and he does well, and he should be proud of himself. And we're not denying that a person should be proud of the pronunciation he makes. But again, the feeling is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this to me. He put this ingenious idea in my head. He gave me this connection, and he set me up. He did it all. You're allowed to take credit. I don't think a person has to walk around saying, I'm a loser, I'm a nobody. We speak about this very often. That's called healthy confidence. You need to have that. But you have to realize that whatever success you have to attribute it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving it to you. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that you're not going to have it, you can be the smartest person in the world. You can have the best degree out of any college. You will not make a dime if Hashem says not to. So this is the nesayin that we deal with. And the lesson of Shemitah, this applies to all of us. Even if we live in America, even if we don't own land, we grapple with this nesayin every day of our life. Allowing there to be a healthy, normal confidence of what we do, versus allowing it to get to our head, allowing the success to take us over and say, wow, I am special. I am amazing. I can do what no one else can do. And I'm really good at it. And therefore, we have to ensure we don't fall into the trap of Koichi V'Otzim Yadi. The Medrash tells us on the Pasuk of Giboire Koyach, who are the strong men? Who is the strength of Klal Yisrael? Who is the Giboire Koyach? So the Medrash tells us, you know who the Giboire Koyach are? Those who guard the Shemitah. If you want to know who the strongest members of Jewish society, it's those that guard the Shemitah. Why? So the simple answer is because it's a big nesayin to guard the Shemitah. Says Reb David Kviat, you know why it's a big nesayin? Because when you're guarding the Shemitah, there's an element in your mind that says, this is actually good for the land to take a little bit of a vacation. You have to take something which logically makes sense and turn it into spirituality. Very often in life we're presented with situations where logic might kick in and say, well, this is logic. Let's say, for example, mitzvah like kibbutz avim. We honor our parents because that's the right thing to do. But why am I doing it? I'm doing it because socially it's accepted, or I'm doing it because Hashem said so. Says Reb David Kriya, you know what makes you a gibor? When you can do a mitzvah which perhaps makes sense logically, but you're able to overstep the logic and make it about Hashem. That's not easy. When a person gives charity, oh, I give charity because that's the right thing to do. No, I give charity because Hashem said so. I'm doing it because that's what Hashem wants. When a person can switch over from a mitzvah sichli to make it a mitzvah about Hashem, that requires unbelievable levels of gevura. So says that idea. The Arachayim HaKadosh had a very cute shot, which I don't really understand from a halachic standpoint. He points out, it says in the Pasuk, that the mitzvah of Shemitah is when? Kisavayu al-aris, when you come into the land, Hashem, I'm going to give to you. And right before that, the Pasuk told us about Har Sinai. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, there's a halacha, we had a share about this Tuesday night, that you're not allowed to give presents to Goyim. There's a prohibition to give a gift to a Goyim. Lo yisichoni. So says the Arachayim HaKadosh, HaKadosh Baruch had a problem. He couldn't give us Eretz Yisrael, because we weren't Jewish. How can he give us such a beautiful gift if we're not Jewish? So Pashup Shad, that's a problem for us. Hashem could do whatever he wants. Secondly, to say that Kala Yisrael before Kabbalah Satari had a din of a Goy is hardly debatable. That's not so Pashup. But the Arachayim HaKadosh says, that's the intro to this week's parasha. First, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Har Sinai. Then we became Jewish. Now that we're Jewish, he can give us all the presents he wants. It was only before we became Jewish, there's a prohibition to give presents to non-Jews. After we become Jewish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give us all the presents he wants. That's the connection, says our Arachayim HaKadosh, the first pasuk. First, Hashem gave us Har Sinai. He made us Jewish. Now that we're Jewish, we can have presents. It's a nice pshat, but I'm not so sure, Al-Api Allah, if that's the case. If Klai Yisrael had a status of Goyim, and if HaKadosh also it wasn't a present, he promised it. It was somewhat given as like a trade-off for all the things that Avraham Avinu did. So it's interesting from the Arachayim HaKadosh. The Al Shulch HaKadosh says that the lesson of Shemitah is to remind us, and this is what we spoke about a few minutes ago, is that Eretz Yisrael is a holy land. It's fundamentally a holy land. And that's why the land is bound by rules. The only country in the world that has rules from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the actual body of the country is Eretz Yisrael. That's mitzvah atluyas baretz. We have mitzvah shebegufa. We have to wear tefillin and we have to keep kosher. But the only time you find an agricultural mitzvah is in Eretz Yisrael. Why is that? Because Eretz Yisrael has intrinsic kedusha. We talk about kedusha as Eretz Yisrael. This is often lost because people talk about Eretz Yisrael. They talk about the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. They talk about the shops and the grocery stores and the hotels. That's not what Eretz Yisrael is special for. What Eretz Yisrael is special for is its kedusha. It's innate kedusha that's into the land. Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg spoke about, and he didn't want to get into it, but he said that's very, very relevant to the big discussion that's taking place about whether or not Eurovision should happen in Eretz Yisrael. The whole Eurovision discussion is a breach in Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. He said he wasn't getting involved in it, but he got involved in it in his share. He pointed out, obviously, that if the land has Kedusha, bringing things that are antithesis of Kedusha is not a good thing. This is not what it means to say Eretz Yisrael evolved, and now we're open-minded to bring in things that are not spiritual. We're a spiritual land. We're not just a Jewish land. We're a spiritual land. We have Kedusha. And that Kedusha requires us to behave a certain way. We often quote the Ramban. The Ramban says that an Avera done in Eretz Yisrael is worse than an Avera done in America. Because Eretz Yisrael is a Makom Kodesh. It's like doing an Avera in a shul versus doing an Avera in your house. It's a special Kedusha. We often lose sight on the Kedusha, intrinsic, inherent Kedusha that the land of Israel has, the land of Eretz Yisrael, the ground, the dirt. That's what the Gemara says in Ksubas, the Amorim used to kiss the stones, they used to kiss the floor of Eretz Yisrael, because it has intrinsic Kedusha. That Shemitah reminds us of the intrinsic Kedusha that Eretz Yisrael has. What does the Pasuk tell us? Shei Shanim Tizra Sadech, you're supposed to work the field for 6 years, 7th year you take a break. So the Mefarshim ask, that's not the Chiddush. The Chiddush is not what I do the 6 years. The Chiddush is what I do the 7th year. If I want to take a 7-year break, that's my business. All Hashem cares is that comes year 7, you're off the land. Why does the Torah tell me you have to work for 6 years? So the Pashup Shad is, it's a lav habo mechlal aseh. Which means if you actually work the 7th year, you're violating a lav, and you're also being mevatel on aseh. But Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Sefer Derish Moshe points out a very nice pshat. He says, Rav Moshe, you know what the Torah is telling you? The lesson of Shemitah is very confusing. The lesson of Shemitah is for the 7th year, don't work and rely upon miracles. So one could think to himself, maybe that's the way I should live my life all year long. I'm never going to work. I'm going to sit in my house and not get a job. I'm not going to go to school. I'm not going to get an education. And Hashem will perform miracles. Haraya, he does that in the 7th year. So let him do it every single year. Says Rav Moshe, no. Sheishanim tizra sadecha. 6 years you got to work. No miracles. You got to work. Adam l'omo yulam. We were put on this planet to work. You got to do your shtalis. You got to get your job, get your education, learn a trade, do something. That's not an option to say, well, Hashem, here, provide for me. The seventh year Hashem does it. The other 6 years we have to toil. This is an important lesson in life. There's always a balancing act between Ishtadlus and Emunah. We try, and then we leave the rest up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says Rav Moshe, 6 years that you got to try. There's no options of saying, well, Hashem, you can provide for me, so why should I bother working? Hashem wants us to work. We got to do our best. The seventh year is when we say, Hashem, you told me, so I listen to you. This is a very difficult balance in life of Emunah, trusting in Hashem, and Ishtadlus. Where does the Emunah end and the Ishtadlus start, and vice versa? Very, very complicated. The Mefarshim say it might depend on you. The more Emunah you have, perhaps you need less Ishtadlus. For those who don't have so much Emunah, you need more Ishtadlus. But every Jew, whoever he is, needs to have Ishtadlus. No one can say, Hashem, I'm not going to go to work, and I'll just find money on the street. That's wrong. Hashem says, I want you to go to work. You can't just say, Hashem, I'm just going to rely on the fact that someone will give me a job. That's not Ishtadlus. You got to go out. You got to go to interviews. You got to make connections, speak to people, get a college education, learn a trade, something. And then you say to Hashem, listen, Hashem, I tried. I went through every avenue. I got a degree. I did all my best. And now I'm not making ends meet. I'm leaving it up to you. But you got to do your Ishtadlus. Says Rav Moshe, that's a Sheishanim Tizra Sadech. 6 years, you got to do your part. This is relying on Hashem is only for the 6th year. So writes Rav Moshe Feinstein. We know that the idea of the Shemitah is that the year should be free to really for those who need it. So Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein pointed out the following observation. It's ingenious. He says the following. He says, if you want to give a gift to an ani, so wouldn't it make more sense for you to work the field, be on top of the field, let the field produce its best, and then give away all the produce? Why is it that if I want to give my field to the ani, I have to be detached from my field? Fakert. If let's say, for example, you want to have a tzedakah account, would you just leave the account in the bank and just let it sit? Or would you work it, invest it, continue to make sure it grows, and then give away that money? Wouldn't that make more sense? So Rabbi Lichtenstein said a beautiful idea. He says, very often in tzedakah, when you give tzedakah, there's a piece of you that says, it's me. You know, I'm a great guy. I'm giving away my hard-earned money to you, which is a very noble thing. But there's still a connection of, it's about me. Said Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the only way we can make it not about you is when you have no connection to the field. You're not even touching the field. You're not working the field. It's not even your field for the year. That's real tzedakah. When you can give away that that you're not even connected to, you can't even connect it to you and say, oh, it's all about me. It's not your field. When you write out checks from your own account, it's very different than giving away someone else's checks. So the Shemitah is the equivalent of giving away someone else's money. To give away your own money, you still feel like, yeah, I made that happen. It's my money. I made this guy have what he needs. Senator Baron Lichtenstein said a beautiful idea that when you can detach you from the gift, it makes the gift giving that much bigger. And that's why we have to completely disconnect from the field in order to give it a full present. So what does the Torah tell us after this? So we're not allowed to work the field? So the Pasuk says that's Shemitah. What happens after 7 cycles of Shemitah? We have the Yovel. What happens in the Yovel? So the Pasuk tells us again, the yield, the fruit, the field becomes hefker. But there's another element of Yovel. What happens at Yovel is all our avadim, all our slaves that we pay top dollar for, all go back to the original owner. Our slaves, land that we bought, everything goes back to the original owner. We lose everything that we had. Can you imagine? You had a slave, you never made a breakfast in your life. You didn't even know how to turn on the gas. You don't have to worry. It's great. You don't have to worry about Bishul Yisrael. You have an Eved Ivri. He's Jewish. He can turn on the fire himself. It's much better than having a non-Jew in the house. And all of a sudden, after all these years of having him, you might have had this guy for 48 years. And now it's the Yovel year, you got to say goodbye. He packs his bags and he leaves. So the Torah tells us what happens. So the Torah says, you sound the shofar. V'havar to shofar tu'a b'chodesh ha'shvi b'esel chodesh. We sound the shofar. Says the Sefer Chinuch. Do you know why we sound the shofar? The shofar is supposed to make all Klal Yisrael feel we're all suffering together. We're all losing our avodim. We're all losing our iron help. We're all losing our survival kit in this world of those who take care of our house, but we're doing it together. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, when you feel that other people are suffering with you, it takes away a little bit of the suffering. The Sefer was supposed to unify us that you're not the only guy losing your Evet, your neighbor, the guy across the street, your cousin, the guy who's 3 blocks away. It's supposed to unify us. So therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, when we're unified, it takes away a little bit of the pain. That's what we know today of the modern day groups. People come together and they share their sorrow. Why do people do that? Because when you hear other people going through the same sorrow as you, it makes it a little bit more manageable. We all think that we're the only ones that have life hard. And then we sit together in a meeting with other people and they also have hard life. And they also have hardships. And they're also dealing with nisyonos. You say to yourself, oh, I'm not the only one. So if he can do it, I can do it. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's why we sound the shofar. We sound the shofar to remind us, you know what? We're all going to be suffering together. We're all going to have to learn how to cook again. And we're all going to have to start shoveling the snow ourselves again. And we're all going to have to learn how to make our beds, because we're all losing our avadim together. So the Beis Av asks, he said, that's a beautiful pshat. There's only one question. Why do we blow the shofar at Yovel the same way we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? We should just blow one long tekiah. We know that the shofar of Yom Kippur mimicked the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. Why is that? So the Beis David explains, because when you gave up your Eved, that wasn't easy. That required Mesiras Nefesh. That required you to really do a very selfless act that wasn't easy. Who is the example of Mesiras Nefesh? The Akedah. Avraham Avinu taking his only son that he waited so long for and be willing to give him up on the Mizbech. That was Mesiras Nefesh. We need to remind ourselves that, again, although obviously it's not the same level, but giving up our Eved is a level of Mesiras Nefesh. We need to be reminded of Mesiras Nefesh. We can't be Mesiras Nefesh as a people. Who taught us that? Avraham and Yitzchak. We have in our DNA the ability to be Mesiras Nefesh. Sedrif Pam, a beautiful idea. Sedrif Pam, we know, the Gemara tells us, there's two ways you can be Mesiras Nefesh. You can serve Hashem b'chol nafshecha, u'v'chol me'odecha. B'chol nafshecha means you're willing to give up your life for being Jewish. That's b'chol nafshecha. That's Mesiras Nefesh. Then there's b'chol me'odecha. You're willing to give up all your money, Rashi says. There's two ways to be Mesiras Nefesh. There's Mesiras Nefesh of your physical life, to be Jewish, and there's giving up of your money. This Eved, when I give up this Eved, I'm not dying to be a Jew. It's not Mesiras Nefesh of Avram, but it's Mesiras Nefesh of B'chol Ma'idecha. I'm giving up my money. I'm giving up an investment. Said Rav Pam, the pre-Holocaust, those Jews who went through the Holocaust, they were V'chol Nafshecha. They gave up their life for being Jewish. Today, Baruch Hashem, that's not the case. But we have to be Mesiras Nefesh B'chol Ma'idecha. We got to give up our money. Those Jews who came to America at the turn of the century, they lost money every single Friday. They lost a job. And even today, we're presented with Nisyonis. Baruch Hashem, no one's testing our life. Oh, even though Nebuch, we have shootings in places of worship and other things. But B'chol Me'idecha, our Nisyon in this world today, in this time, is money. How are we going to treat our money? Are we going to give up our money for Hashem or not? And therefore, says Rav Pam, that's the Nisayin of the Eved. The Nisayin of the Eved is very similar to this idea of giving up of one's money. Then the Pasuk tells us at the end of the Yovel, V'shavtem ish al achuz asoy, each man will return to his inheritance, V'ish al mishpachtoy tashuv, and each man will return to his family. You're going to go back to where you were, everyone goes back to where they're supposed to be. Then the Pasuk tells us, V'shnas ha-yovel hazois, in this year of Yovel, tashuvu ish al achuz asoy. So the Zayir HaKadosh writes the following thing. Says the Zayir HaKadosh, that what does it mean, Bishnas HaYoyvel HaZois? So the Zayir writes, HaZois is a gematria. What's the word Ha? Is He. He is 5,000. What does Zois equal? 408. Bishnas HaYoyvel HaZois, in this year, 5,408, Tashuvu, the Jewish people, will return Isha L'chuzasai, each man, to his original family. That was supposed to be the year of the Geula. This is the Zayir HaKadosh, who was supposedly written by Shem Marichai, whose Yartzeit we're commemorating right now. What year is 5,408? 5,408 years in Jewish years? That's the year 1648. The year 1648, Mashiach did not come. How do I know? Because we live past it. Now, not only did Mashiach not come in the year 1648, you know what happened in the year 1648? 500,000 Jews were killed. That was Khmelnytsky's revolt in Ukraine. 1648, 1649. 500,000 Jews were dying, murdered. So what happened? The Zayir got it wrong? How can that be? How can the Zayir have got it wrong? The Zayir said, this is going to be the year. Bishnas hayoyvel hazois, this year. The Shach, the great commentary, the Shach, who we learn his commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, he lived during 1648, 1649. And he made another comment. There's another pasuk. We quoted this, I think, in the Chumash year, perhaps last year, maybe even this year. It says in Parashas Achrimos, it says, "Bezois yavai Aaron el Hakodesh." With this, they say the same drasha. Bezois, this year is the year Aaron is going to go into Kodesh Hakodesh because Mashiach is going to come. What's the Zois? 5,408. 1648. Didn't happen. How can it be? It didn't happen. So the Mefarshim say, because we read the word Zois wrong. The Zois is not supposed to be 5,408. The Zois is supposed to represent 408, because what is Zois 408? That represents the words Tzoim, Koil, and Mammon. Crying out to Hashem, fasting, and charity. When you do those three things, and those three things each equal together, they'll equal 5,408. When you keep those things, then Klal Yisrael will merit, that's Each word is 136 equals 136 times 3 is 48. Zeis, you know what the ticket out of this galus is? Tzayim, got to fast. Koil, got to daven. Mammon, we got to give charity. Not the year 5408, but rather it's how we get out of this. This is what the Shach wrote after the riots of Chmelnytsky. He made this comment. So therefore, the answer is it's not a ticket magical year. It's we got to become better people. If we want to get out of this galus, if we want this to be the year, we got to make sure we're changing our lifestyle, the way we're living, and that's where we can get out of the galus. That's all about Shemitah and the Yovel. Then, in the middle of Yovel, the Torah takes like a break. And the Torah writes, V'chisim kurmim kur la'misecha, and if you will sell something to your friend, oy konami ara misecha, or you will make a purchase from your friend, al toinu ish es achil, do not pain your brother. What does this have to do with anything? So Rashi says, first of all, what are we talking about over here? Zu einos mam. There's an entire sugi and bam in the fourth parak of something called einos dvar. You're not allowed to overcharge. If the product has a certain value, you can't overcharge. You're not allowed to overcharge, inflate the market. The one exception to this, the Gemara says, is karka. Ask anyone in the real estate business. Real estate has no value. Come to my neighbor, come to Queens, you'll see what homes sell for. You'll know that there's absolutely no einos on karka. People will buy anything for property. They say San Francisco's even worse. Parts of California, they sell these little homes for over $1 million because real estate has no value. People will pay anything and everything for real estate. So karka is not bound by this, but objects. I can't sell a computer for $400,000. That's illegal. That's, you know, I'm not allowed to do so. I have to, there's a ratio, a sixth, and there's rules and regulations. That's the Torah telling me I'm not allowed to overcharge. But the obvious question is, why here, why now? What's the connection? So the answer is, according to the Kli Yakar, it's beautiful. Why would I overcharge my friend? Because I got to stay ahead. I got to do well in business. Why do I have to do well in business? Because I believe that I'm the one who controls my financial future. My financial destiny is made up by me and how good I am at my job. So I got to survive at all, whatever it costs, I need to survive. That's the exact opposite message of Shemitah. The message of Shemitah is you're not in control of your financial future destiny. Hashem is. So right after that, we mentioned this fellow who thinks he's going to get ahead by overcharging. What are you? You're foolish. Why do you think you're going to gain by overcharging? Hashem is the one who's controlling your panel, so therefore there's no reason to overcharge. And then we find a few psukim later, another prohibition. It says, V'loy seinu ishes hamisai. Don't do oino. So Rashi says, this is referring to oino's dvarim. Don't speak harmful to your friend. Don't be not nice. Don't give bad advice. Don't speak ill. Certain way of speaking. That's called Einoz Dvar. Two different types of Einoz. So Reb Steinman points out, you know, usually when you rip a guy off, there's Einoz Dvarim there also. Because what's Einoz Dvarim? Bad advice. If I sell you a computer for $300,000, that's pretty bad advice because the market is much lower. Or you can get it much lower. It's also Einoz Dvarim. But Reb Moshe Bick makes a very interesting observation. He says, if you look at the Pesukim carefully, the Torah changes its wording. In the first Pesuk, where it talks about financial overcharging, it says over there, don't do it to your brother. When it talks about verbal misdeeds, there it says, don't do it because he's your amisoi. Says Reb Moshe Bick, when you do business with people and you overcharge, it's usually what we call business. I love you, I care about you, but business is business. We're still brothers, but I'm going to rip you off. But we're brothers. When you do einos dvarim, when you say not nice things to people, then you lost the brotherhood feeling. Now just amisoi. You're part of the nation. You're a Jew. That brother connection was severed. In business, although it sounds funny, but there's something truth to this. When you rip off someone in business, you're not doing it because, you know, you hate him. You just want to get ahead. You can still like him, and we can still get along. But I just want to make money off of you. So you're still my brother. Yeah, we're close, but I'm going to rip you off anyways. When I do einos dvarim, I'm going to speak ill of you and give you bad advice. That's because I'm just not a nice person. I don't feel you as a brother. I'm disconnected. Therefore, that's why there's a change in word. The einos dvarim, Rabbi say, the Mefarshim say, is even true if you say it to children. You can't say not nice things to kids. Adults say, oh, you can say whatever you want to kids. No, you can't. You can't hurt a kid's feelings for no reason. You can't speak ill of a kid. You can't say, give kids bad advice. You can't tell a kid, hey, put your finger in there, and a kid puts his finger in there and burns himself. That's einos dvarim. The Chazanish held that you're not allowed to name your child a name that he's going to get beaten up in school for having. So Chazanish held. If you give your kid a name that's destined that every kid's going to make fun of him in school, don't name your kid that. That's einos dvarim. You're setting your kid up to get bullied in school. I would add to that, don't dress your kid in a way he's going to get bullied. Don't make your kid one of those kids who's setting himself to be bullied in school. That's einos dvarim. You have a responsibility as a parent to ensure that your kid does not get name calling because you did things that are foolish. Therefore, says the Chazon Ish, that's included in Anos Dvarim as well. What we have over here is, in the next Pasuk, I'm sorry, in this Pasuk, it says, don't do that. V'asisem es chukasai v'es mishpatai. You should keep my rules and my decrees. Then, v'shaftem al ha'aretz levetach. You'll dwell in Eretz Yisrael with comfort. Then the next Pasuk says, v'nosna ha'aretz priya. The fruit will produce. V'achaltem l'soy v'en. You'll eat comfortably. V'shaftem levetach ala. And you'll dwell in the land comfortably. Asks the Meshech Chachma, what is the two Pesukim talking about? It basically says the same thing. If you follow the mitzvahs, everything will be good and you'll dwell in Eretz Yisrael comfortably. Says the Meshech Chachma, a beautiful and such a true idea. He says there's two forms of anti-Semitism. There's one anti-Semitism because we keep the Torah mitzvahs. That bothers the Goyim to no end. Our moral, religious standard is what bothers the Goyim. There's another thing that the Goyim don't like about us. Our success, from a financial standpoint. When we do well financially, that makes the Goyim hate us even more. Says the Meshech Chachma, that's what the Torah is talking to. When you'll be keeping the Torah and mitzvahs, and that's the reason for the Goyim to hate you, don't worry. They won't touch you. Don't think that your Judaism will cause the Goyim to hate you. Right? There are Jews in France that will not walk around with a yarmulke today. Because if they're going to show their Judaism, they're going to get attacked for it. And they're probably right. Says the Meshech Chachma, that's what the Pasuk is telling you. If you keep Judaism, they will not attack you for being Jewish. I promise you I'll protect you. And on the second part of anti-Semitism, v'nosna aretz priya, your food is starting, you're going to produce great fruit, you're going to be successful, you're going to be wealthy, that's going to make the Goyim hate you. Which we see today, so true. Don't worry, v'shaftem levetach ala, I also won't let them get you. So on both fronts of anti-Semitism, says the Meshech Chachma, Hashem will protect us. If we're keeping Torah mitzvahs, will protect us. And even if we're wealthy, and hopefully we are wealthy and successful, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will still protect us. What's the next pasuk? If you'll ask, what will we eat in the seventh year? Now we're jumping back to Shemitah. Very confusing. We're talking about Shemitah, business, Shemitah. Says the Pasuk, if you'll ask, what am I going to eat in the seventh year? I have nothing to eat. Asks Rav Moshe Bick, why did this question first pop up now? This question should have popped up in the beginning. He says, no, because we just learned that you're not allowed to overcharge. If there was no issur of overcharging, so everyone can make a great business. There's a shortage of crops, everyone's going to overcharge, I'll become rich. But now that I just learned you're not allowed to overcharge, now I have a great question. What on earth am I going to do to survive the whole seventh year? Ma noichal, what am I going to eat? Says the Sfas Emes, what are the words ma noichal? What's the mem and the nun? Mon. Ma noichal. What am I going to eat? The answer is mon. What was mon? You as a nation learned that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could provide for you in very, very amazing ways. Don't worry so much about how you're going to live. You lived for 40 years on imaginary food. Ketzapichas bedvash. You lived on non-food. You can live, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can provide for you. You don't have to worry. Hashem can make it work. So ask to Baron Cutler, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes us his grand promise that we're going to have all the food we need, so why is Shemitah such a big nisayon? We mentioned earlier that the Giboyrei Kayach, the strong men of Klal Yisrael, are the Shemri HaShemitah. What's the big... If HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to me and said, listen, go to Kailul, I don't want you to go to work, and I'll provide for you all the money you need. Not much of a nisayon. Says Baron Cutler, not true. You think it's not a nisayon. It's still a big nisayon. When you have a field that you worked for 6 years and you put all your energy into it, to walk away from it without anything still requires to be a giboy, even with the promise of a Kadosh Baruch. You think it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. Because these are nisayonis of nisayonis and mamonis are much bigger than you think. They're unbelievable nisayonis. Throughout history, and you can look this up, we have seen miracles upon miracles that have taken place in Eretz Yisrael when Jews have kept the Shemitah. For example, there was a farmer who lived in Eretz Yisrael, and he decided that he wants to keep the Shemitah. But if he keeps the Shemitah, he's not going to have a job. So someone told him, I have a good idea. What you should do is, during the Shemitah year, go around collecting scrap metal in the land of Eretz Yisrael and sell it. So he did this. That year, metal rose to an unbelievable value. And he made a killing, this fellow. Enough to live the whole year. The year after Shemitah, metal dropped to the bottom, where he would have not made a dime off the metal. So for that year, Hashem provided. This fellow needed a way to live. Hashem provided for him. 1959, there was a year of Shemitah. And that was shortly after HaKamas HaMedina, so the country wasn't doing financially like it is today. There was a shortage of one food they couldn't produce. There was no onions. Now again, we can live without onions, but they didn't have onions. Until one day, there was an Egyptian ship that was heading, that somehow made a mistake in travel, and was heading towards Eretz Yisrael. Now these Egyptians know that Egypt and Eretz Yisrael, Adayim Azeh, are not exactly loving countries. So these guys on the ship were so afraid, because they were entering into Israeli territory, they abandoned the ship and ran away. The ship came on shore, and you know what was the ship full of? Onions. Full of onions. So Klal Yisrael got their onions for the year. They were provided from a miracle, a mamash, a nes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the onions from an Egyptian ship that was abandoned by the crew found its way to Eretz Yisrael, and this year they were able to have their onions. So throughout history, miracles upon miracles have happened. 1952, there was a fellow named Rabbi Yomim Mendelssohn. Rabbi Yomim Mendelssohn was the Rav of the Kaimimiyos community, and they decided they're going to keep the Shemitah. And they did not do anything. And all their neighboring towns were making fun of him. You're so foolish, you're not going to make it. So what ended up happening that year, the way the rain fell, the rain was delayed. So all the people that planted in the seventh year, the rain didn't work for them. But since they planted later, they had a successful year more than everyone else. So go out through history, you'll see b'chush, with your own eyes, how the Shemitah, and there's numerous stories. Again, today you can just Google a story and you'll find it. I'm just giving you just an example of how the Torah is nitzchias. The Torah is forever. That, again, so you'll ask me, so why do we have Shemitah campaigns? Why do we give money to people in Eretz Yisrael to let them live on their own? So the answer is because we want to have a part in that mitzvah. We want to have a part in the mitzvah. We live in America. We don't have any Shemitah. How can we have a connection to Shemitah and have the schus of Shemitah and all that it carries? We can help another Yid survive the Shemitah. And that's why it's a very worthwhile endeavor. And that's why there were many Rabbanim that were against the Heter Mechira. Because what happens when you sell land in Eretz Yisrael? That's a violation of Leisi Chanim. You're not supposed to sell land in Eretz Yisrael. So many people thought, don't sell land in Eretz Yisrael. It's better to guard the Shemitah. But just to wrap up, right after this, the Torah tells you that you should give money to a Jew who's fallen on tough times. So the question is, what is the connection? So Moshe Shtemich says beautifully, the connection is the following. You just survived the hardest year of your life. And you survived on people telling you, don't worry, believe in Hashem. Then a guy comes knocking on your door who says, I need money. What is the first response to him is? Believe in Hashem. Hey, I did it. No one gave me a handout. Do the same. Says the Torah, that's not the way it works. When it's your money, you talk about Hashem. When it's him, you give. Very often in life, people say, oh, have a munah. Tell the guy, don't worry, it's going to be okay. Yeah, you want to have a munah, you can have a munah. But if another yid comes and says, I need money, you write him out a check. That's why the Torah put these two things next to each other. Don't try to give me frumah tainas and say, well, I survived. I managed. You can do it too. No, that's not the Torah way. If you survived, I'm very happy for you, and you have a special place with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if you can help another yid, you're obligated. You must help another yid. And therefore, that's why the Torah puts the two mitzvahs right next to each other to teach us that when you have the chance to help, you must help. You must be mechazik and give assistance to another Jew.